You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
Greenbelt Festival this year will include an intentional focus on Palestine in its programme. There's nothing new at Greenbelt. We've been platforming and spotlighting the Palestinian struggle for justice and equal rights since the 1980s. And we will continue to do so until Palestinians enjoy justice and equal rights. What is different this year is the recent law prescribing Palestine Action as a terrorist organisation. That said, whatever we might think of the prescription, it is the law. And as a public event and a registered charity, we need to operate within it. So, while we continue to hold utter outrage in our hearts and minds about what is unfolding before the world's eyes in Gaza and the West Bank, and while we have had and will continue to platform activists involved in non-violent direct action, Greenbelt must abide by the law as it currently stands. We also do not want to make things any more difficult for our Palestinian guests, of whom there are many and who are here with us at the festival this year. And Greenbelt have shared this statement in advance with the artists and speakers who are platforming at Greenbelt. So we ask for your good grace in understanding this. And if there are any questions outstanding afterwards, then whilst I may not be able to answer them myself, if you wanted to come to me, then I could probably put you in touch with somebody. So thank you very much for listening to that. Thank you for coming. We'll give you the best experience that we can in the unexpected circumstances. And I'm going to hand over to Ian. Thank you.
For those who didn't hear, the microphone is at full volume. So if you... Apologies. If anyone can squeeze in at all any more, that will help those at the back. Thank you, if there's any space. I'm Ian from the Iona community. I'm a staff member and associate, and we're delighted in this Wild Goose venue to be working with various partners over the weekend and with Sabil Kairos for this session. Just to say, lots of you will know the Iona community has a long-standing concern for the situation in Palestine and Israel. If you would like to find out more about that, our stall across in that corner has two bits of information. One is our position paper, which has recently been strengthened to update to reflect the current situation, and also our top 10 tips, how can I help Palestinian people? And any of our members and staff who are around behind the stalls would be delighted to talk to you about our perspective on things. So that's all I'm going to say from our end, and I will hand over to Lynn from Sabil Kairos. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Hello, everybody. I first need to say that this session is being recorded. I next need to say that our best laid plan was to have, based on how many people turned up to the workshop last year, was to have small groups going to different stations. So our workshop today is based on this book called Contemporary Way of the Cross, which is based on some of the stations of the cross. And you were going to walk round the four different stations and look at the resources, but there's too many of you to do that. So what we're going to do is we're going to present each station from the front. And then at the end of the whole session, you will have the opportunity to look at the resources that we brought along. Okay? So, Claire, do you want to just say a little bit about... I mean, you might know about Palestine, but you might not know a lot about Sabil Kairos. So Claire will just say a couple of words.
I
just want to say this as well before we start, that, which is at the beginning of the Contemporary Way of the Cross. In the old city, we read the inscriptions, pause, where a plaque on the wall reminds us that Jesus falls under the weight of the cross over and over again. In the refugee camp, we read the writing on the wall, the stenciled images of martyrs, graffiti, dusty posters, calls to action, cries of pain, over and over again.
Hi, everybody. I'm going to have to try and hold it together. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about Sibyl Kairos, but I'm actually overwhelmed by how many of you are here. Because we're on our stand the whole time, I haven't got to anything else yet. So to see so many of you, sorry, it means such a lot. So thank you. So Sibyl Kairos, we are a campaigning charity, and we partner with two organisations in Palestine. We work with Sibyl Jerusalem, and they are an ecumenical liberation theology organisation. So we partner with them, and we also partner with Kairos Palestine. And some of you may be familiar with the Kairos document that came out in 2009, which was a document that came out from Christian Palestinians talking about non-violent resistance and finding peace and justice for Palestinians. Sorry. So we in this country, we amplify the voices of our Palestinian partners. We don't try and say anything from ourselves. We are always speaking the words of our partners in Palestine. And we work with churches here in the UK. As I'm sure you're all familiar, churches in the UK are not always so aware of what's going on in Palestine. So we have different groups within the denominations who we work with to look at policy around Palestine and how the churches use their voices for Palestine. So that's what we're doing. We also do take some trips out to Palestine so that people get to experience what life is like living under occupation. So that's a small overview. And thank you God, I'm not crying anymore. So that's us. And I'm going to hand back to you, Lynn, for us to begin our workshop today.
We're just going to begin with a small reflection, which was written by someone called Reverend John Swales. And hopefully you'll all sort of identify with what he says in this.
I don't want to be a Christian who forgets how to feel, who hides behind answers, quotes verses like shields, and silences sorrow with a song.
I don't want a faith of romanticized abstraction, where resurrection is polished and the cross is theory. Give me something real. Flesh and blood, grief and grace.
I want to weep with eyes wide open, tears that speak truth, tears that rise from the ground of compassion, from the jagged knowledge that the world is not as it was meant to be.
I have seen it. The wounded souls, the haunted eyes, the bruises beneath the surface. I have felt the weight of injustice that crushes and isolates while the world looks away.
These are not tears of despair, but of resistance, of aching love, of holding the pain when no one else will.
I want to hope that isn't saccharine, not hopium, not denial in disguise, but a defiant, dirt under the fingernails kind of hope. The kind that walks through the valley, sits in the ashes, and still whispers, "Even here, God."
I want a gospel that holds the wound, a Christ who draws close, a spirit who groans, a God who gathers every tear in a bottle, holds every sorrow like a fragile flame, and knows what it is to break.
I want to believe. Not cheaply, not loudly, but with trembling trust, that one day every tear will be wiped away. Not erased, but remembered, redeemed, and transfigured.
Until then, let me be the kind who weeps, who walks in holy realism, who holds vigil in the shadow of the cross and waits with aching hope for the dawn. Okay, so I'm going to be speaking about house demolitions. And could you bring my display? If some of you will be able to see my display. Weak from the wounds of his torture, Jesus fell for a second time. Likewise, the continuing policy of home demolition by the Israelis is a cruel and inhumane action which heavily contributes to the suffering of the already weakened Palestinian people. The Word made flesh found his home among us, but his home was crushed, his bones broken like the stones of a demolished house. Thousands of Palestinian homes in the West Bank and East Jerusalem have been bulldozed simply because they interfere with settlement expansion. A body is more than flesh and bones, a home more than the stones which form its walls. So I have a display here, but I'd love you all to come and wander around and read and look at the pictures at the end. But I'm just going to share off the top of my head, because I was in Palestine back in February and March. And on the first day that we arrived, we were taken to the Silwan district, where there are multiple home demolitions. And we met with Fakhri Abu Dihab. And I don't know if you can see the picture here. He's standing by the rubble of his home. He was born in this home that no longer stands. He'd lived there for 63 years. And he had a demolition order on his home. And one night, there was a loud banging on the door. In the middle of the night, there were 10 family members living in this home. It was Fakhri and his wife and their children and their grandchildren. And they were woken in the night, and they were taken out of their home, and their home was demolished. And when a home is demolished in Palestine, once the demolition has taken place, you are then presented with the bill for the demolition. You are then presented, if you want the rubble to be cleared, with the bill for that. And then if the demolition crew have eaten whilst they have been demolishing your home, they will give you the bill for the food they've eaten, or they will make you provide them with food. And for me, home is really important. It is my safe place. It is where I can feel protected from the outside world. So to meet Fakhri and his wife, who now live on the same land, but in a very small container. They invited us into their home. They cooked dinner for us, this two-room container space, and they shared their story with us. And they said, please go back home and tell people what we are experiencing. He and his wife have to live there by themselves now. There is no space for the children and the grandchildren, who have had to move into other homes in the district. And that was very hard to see. And I don't think we can even comprehend it here in the UK. But there are hundreds and hundreds of demolition orders on homes. And in the Silwan district, the reason why Israel is demolishing the homes is because they want to create the King David Gardens, which is going to be a beautiful garden space for Israelis to go and enjoy, based on a historical place for the Jewish people. And so all these many families who have lived in this area for generations are either having their homes demolished, or there are possession orders where you are removed from your home and a Jewish family will move into your home instead. So please come and have a look and see. I don't want to spend massive time speaking because I want us to be able to look. And please look at the action we are encouraging people to take, which is here, which is around emailing our MPs, around stopping JCB or boycotting JCB, because JCB equipment is used very often in the destruction of these homes. So that is one action we can be taking. We can sit with our grief, and we do, and I can see faces around here. We can sit with our grief, but as we gather in solidarity, we must also find a way that we can take action. So that is my little section. Didn't go quite as I'd planned. Oh, also just one thing. I've brought some soft toys, and oh my gosh, this is heartbreaking. Children who live in homes in Palestine, they will take their favorite toy to school with them because they don't know if their home will be standing when they get back. And once the rubble is there, it's very hard to find any of your belongings. So just knowing what that must be like for children, it's absolutely heartbreaking. So that's why we have the toys as well. Oh yes, we forgot the prayer. Let's pray. We praise you, Holy God, that you bring new life out of grief and loss in your mercy. Comfort all those who have lost their homes through persecution, war, exile, or deliberate destruction. Give them security, a place to live, and neighbours they trust to be with them, a new sign of peace to the world. Amen.
So this station is child prisoners linking with Jesus is stripped. Jesus knew what it was like to be arrested for crimes he did not commit. He knew what it was like to be taken in the middle of the night and interrogated, tortured, and imprisoned. Jesus was taken from his friends at the Garden of Gethsemane. Palestinian children are taken, sometimes from the warmth of their own beds or from the safety of their homes and families. But while Jesus chose not to respond to the charges that were being brought against him, the children of Palestine have no opportunity to respond or to plead their ignorance. So I've got a few of the resources that I've got here are stories by children about how they were arrested and their experience of prison in the middle of the night. And maybe I'll just read one. So this is Muin. Muin, a ninth grade student and the only child in his family, has been placed under administrative detention. I don't know if you all know what that is, but that means that a child is imprisoned and then there's never any charges brought against him. It's supposed to last for 6 months, but it can just be renewed ad infinitum. So this Muin is under administrative detention. Israeli soldiers forcibly entered Muin's home at 3:40 a.m. on February the 19th. Muin's father was immediately detained, blindfolded, and restrained with his hands behind his back. When Muin awoke and went to find his father, Israeli soldiers seized him and began searching the house. The family was not given an arrest warrant and were told not to move, while soldiers damaged their belongings and confiscated phones and a computer. The soldiers attempted to blindfold Muin and tie his hands behind his back as they took him away. Afterward, a soldier warned Muin's father not to move for at least 10 minutes. Now, the families aren't told where the children are taken, and the children, therefore, don't get to see their parents or even have a lawyer for a good few days until the lawyer finds out where they've been taken. And they're just kept in fact, was it in March? I got my information from Defence for Children International Palestine, and they have got lots of testimonies from children. And there was a boy, you know, we are focused a lot now on Gaza because of the horrendous killing there. But the killing in the West Bank has just been going on for years, since 1967. There was a boy, they showed you a picture of the boy in all healthiness, but he died of starvation and liver failure and every other failure, organ failure, in a West, I don't know if it was a West Bank prison or, because often they get taken over to Israel itself to go in prison there, which actually is illegal under international law. As it happens, Defence for Children International Palestine have a webinar on Tuesday evening, this coming Tuesday. Claire's put is it at the front? There's a QR code, or you can come and get details about it if you want to hear from children's stories direct. On the 17th of October in London, we have a Sabil Kairos conference, and two speakers from Palestine are coming over. One of them is Sahar Francis, who works for Adala, which is a prisoner support organisation. That's all ages. The other one is Tanous, Ashram Tanous, who he's the successor to Muntha Isaac. You probably have all heard of Muntha Isaac, or maybe, and the baby in the rubble, or Christ in the rubble, that he talked about the Christmas before last, saying where if Jesus was born today, that's where he would be born. Anyway, Ashraf Tanous is now the Lutheran pastor as Munth has moved to another job. So you can sign on for our conference. It would normally cost £15 for the conference, but it's £10 if you sign on from Greenbelt, and you can either do it here or come to our Sabil Kairos stall. So I'll just finish with a prayer. Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me, for it is to such as these that the kingdom of heaven belongs. Protect and bless the innocent, heal the damaged minds, fill the hearts of future generations not with fear, but with joy and hope. Loving God, hear our prayer." Yeah. By the way, all our words are written by Palestinians.
Thank you. So the next station is looking at water, remembering the station of the cross that Jesus is thirsty. And we're going to read from John 19. "After this, when Jesus knew that all was now finished, he said, in order to fulfill the scriptures, 'I am thirsty.' A jar full of sour wine was standing there. So they put a sponge full of the wine on a branch of hyssop and held it to his mouth. Jesus cries, 'I thirst,' but no water is given to him, only bitter wine and hyssop. In the midst of a brutal occupation, the Palestinians also cry out for water. Water to drink, for sanitation, and for irrigation. Now, I brought a few things that represent water. You might remember the water, the lady at the well, the Samaritan woman. And this is actually from that that well, Jacob's well in Nablus, which is in Samaria. I was very fortunate to be in the West Bank in July, and I stayed in Hebron, which is one of the areas that's most hit by the water issue. And I was with a family of 8 people. Over the 7 days I was there, there was no water coming through the tap. There was no piped water. This is purely because Israel switched it off. When I was there in 2019, a lot of the villages like Bethlehem and around that area had water 2 times a week. So those 2 times, you would fill everything up. When you stand and look over Israel or Palestine and you're not sure if you're looking at a settlement or you're looking at a Palestinian village, the way you can tell easily is the Palestinian villages have lots of black tanks on top of their houses because they have to store water from when Israel deigns to let them have any. They pay for this water and they pay more than the Israelis do for electricity, gas, water, everything, because it's coming through from Israel's control, even though it's often from underneath Palestinian lands. There's a whole, you can research all of this. So I knew that there would be a water problem, so I took out some wet wipes, which was extremely useful. But the family needed water, and they had to buy drinking water to use for drinking, for cooking, for all different things. But occasionally there might be a neighbour who didn't need all their water and they hoped that it would come. For those who are interested in that, I have a video of them filling up every possible pot and pan from a pipe that they got from the neighbour's water supply. But imagine if you had 3 inches of water, 3 inches in a bucket, and what you can do with that. That was my shower one day, and I think that was because they were being kind to me. I was prepared to do exactly the same as everybody else. You can't flush the toilet. Again, like we said about home demolitions, we all know the obvious things about having to buy water. You don't think of the unobvious things, coming out of using the loo and apologizing to the next person because it's embarrassing and it's unhealthy and it's disgusting. And this is forced water control. We all know it's infinitely worse in Gaza. In the whole time I was there, they kept saying, water's coming, hopefully it'll come tomorrow, hopefully it'll come tomorrow, but it never did. So the difference is when you see a lot of the settlements, remembering settlements is a kind word for little colonies, they often have their own swimming pools. So within the same area above, because the colonies are built above, indigenous people, for those who would like to argue there's no such thing as Palestinians, indigenous people always build their villages up on the valley floor because that's where the water is. So all the Palestinian villages are on the valley floor. All the settlements are built up, which means they also have sniper advantage. And if you've seen things like the recent sky report, you'll see the settlers hurtling down the hill. And they can watch them in every possible way. But they also have control because they pipe the water up and there's nothing left for the Palestinians. And they often have their swimming pool. There's one beautiful tree in Al-Walaja, which is right next to Jerusalem, but separated by the wall. This tree is proven to be 5,000 years old. It's the oldest, from 5,000 BC, sorry, 7,000 years old. Some Italians went and proved that. They are struggling to keep it alive. If anybody's interested, the guy who's sort of guardian of the tree asked me to look into if anybody can help fund water for his tree, because again, that's a really important sort of symbol. The olive tree is a symbol of life in Palestine, and just keeping it alive is really, really difficult. Some of you will have seen the Oscar-winning film, and I found one of the worst moments was when they poured cement into the well. And actually, there's plenty in the Bible that says about do not destroy trees, do not destroy water supply. So if anybody has issues with Bible quotes and things like that, then please come and talk to us, because there's plenty that we can reply to anything biblical. But again, all the streams are cut off and people just have a tiny little flow of water left. So water is absolutely the water of life. And Jesus said, if you drink this water, you will be thirsty again. And that's what the hope is, that the hope is in Jesus. But again, we have to try and do what we can for practical things for people, to try and help them with water supplies. So this, again, the Israelis have between 240 to 300 litres of water per week. But the standard minimum is 100 litres. That's the WHO guidelines, is 100 litres. And the Palestinians in the West Bank, and this is actually quite old now, is 73 litres. I think it's a lot less than that now, because everybody who I spoke to in Palestine said since October the 7th, things have become infinitely worse. Infinitely worse. So there are actions to take again. There's lots of things to read to find out different people's experiences. And again, a quote, the love of God, love of justice is what calls us to be part of the remnant, not the fact that we're getting results. We have to do what we can do. We have to stand and say to God at the end of the day, what did we try? He won't ask, how did you succeed? He'll ask, what did you do? What did you try? So people who are saying, a lot of people say, what can one person do? If every person at Greenbelt wrote to their MP or signed a petition, it would make an impact if every person in your church did. So we have to get the movement keeping going. So just to finish this bit, and we're all happy to talk to people at the Sabeel Kairos tent. So just going to finish with a prayer. God, who called us forth from the dust, send your living waters upon us. Sprinkle us again with your purifying rains. Make your mountains fill with dancing streams, your valleys swell with splashing ponds, as fertile as the River Jordan, as renewing as the waters of baptism, as overflowing as the cup of salvation. Feed all living things with your life-sustaining water as you fill them with your grace. As we gaze upon this land that so thirsts for your water, let it remind us of all the thirsts in this world, the thirst for justice, the thirst for peace, the thirst for opportunity, the thirst for reconciliation, the thirst for hope. And when your blessings rain from the sky, as assuredly they will, and we kneel again at the pools and fountains, teach us to cup our hands and gently, gracefully, in solidarity, turn first and share with one another. Amen.
So I'm going to do the last station, which is about the crucifixion, Jesus being nailed to the cross, and thinking of some of the parallels between that and the situation in Gaza today. Jesus is nailed to the cross, the most physically grueling method of execution ever devised. His body, weak and bleeding from the preceding torture, is broken and crushed by this final act of brutality. The Palestinians also know physical and violent devastation, perhaps nowhere more than in Gaza. I guess all of us here will have seen something through the media of the pictures of the suffering and the devastation in Gaza. We may have read things as well. What we may have seen or read about will only be a certain proportion of the reality that faces people in Gaza today. We know that according to the Ministry of Health in Gaza, over 62,000 people have now died, many of them women and children. That is a conservative estimate, according to others, of how many have died. Because, of course, many have been buried beneath the rubble, and they will not yet be counted in those figures. So the figures are much bigger than the 62,000. Thinking about Gaza today, one of the issues is how people survive when food is so scarce, and indeed water, as we've thought about. Thinking about food, I've got just a couple of things to share with you here. A couple of everyday staples. So I've got half a kilo of tomatoes and a 1.5 kilogram bag of flour. In relation to that 1.5 kilogram bag of flour, in Gaza today, that could cost you up to £30. Whereas when I bought that in the UK from Aldi, it was 70 pence. The cost of food has multiplied astronomically in Gaza, making it very difficult, if nigh on impossible, for many people to afford such inflated prices. And given the difficulty in aid getting into Gaza at the moment, is it no wonder that so many are starving and indeed sadly dying due to malnutrition, lack of good and nourishing food? Going back to that 0.5 kilogram of tomatoes, in Gaza today, that could cost you up to £11.15. When I bought those tomatoes, again in Aldi, I think they were on special offer, but they were 89 pence rather than £1.19. So again, the cost of that food has put it out of the reach of many, if not most, of the population. So there is a crisis in terms of getting food into Gaza. How would we feel, I wonder, if we were faced with going to the supermarket and those high costs? How would we feel if we have children, grandchildren, other family members that we are seeking to provide for but couldn't buy the food and be dependent upon what little aid is getting through? The mad scramble for food as it comes through on aid trucks, or indeed is maybe parachuted in, which poses, of course, its own dangers. So there's a desperate need for more food in Gaza today. One of the actions that we'd like to encourage you as Sibyl Kairos to consider taking in relation to Gaza is to email your MP to ask them to put pressure on our government to stop arming Israel. You may have read in the media that a number of months ago now, David Lammy said that the UK government would no longer provide some of the arms to Israel. But we are still providing parts for F-35s, which are bombing those in Gaza. I hope, like me, that you find that painful to be part of our nation that is supporting the bombing of many thousands of people who can do nothing to escape from that terror that's being unleashed upon them. So if, like me, you feel strongly about that, perhaps you would like to email your MP. Can I just ask you to stop a moment? But if you want to raise something later, that's fine. Thank you. So I'd like us just to hold a moment of quiet before I read a prayer for Gaza. For those awake through the night in fear, mercy. For those awake through the night in pain, mercy. For those awake through the night in hunger, mercy. For those awake through the night in grief, mercy. For those awake through the night in compassion, more compassion. Bless those who vote to end the killing. Bless those who vote to end the starvation. Bless those who read the law and uphold it. Bless those who heed the prophets who cry, turn, turn, turn from your evil ways. Turn your swords into pruning hooks and study war no more. Amen.
So if we'd have done it how we were planned, those four stations, and then we were going to, well, you are all together, but we were, the idea was to bring you all back together for a fifth station, which Jeremy will introduce. And we realise it's been a really heavy session.
So from Luke chapter 23, verses 25 to 26, Simon of Cyrene helps Jesus carry his cross. Pilate handed Jesus over as they wished. As they led him away, they seized a man, Simon of Cyrene, who was coming from the country, and they laid the cross on him and made him carry it behind Jesus. Simon of Cyrene may have been forced to carry Jesus' cross, but his act is an example for us to follow. As Christians, we're called to action. In the face of severe injustice, it is not enough simply to sympathise. Our acts of solidarity with the suffering and oppressed are a source of strength and hope. Our presence reassures them that they are not alone, that there are others from around the world who are willing and able to help people bear their cross of suffering.
If you would like to, at the end, write a prayer or a pledge. We have some little labels. This is also at the Sabeel Kairos stand, because I think sometimes taking action, there's a lot of talk about Palestine in Greenbelt, and a lot of people feel inspired to act. So it's putting it onto paper and saying, I'm going to do this when I return. And please do that now or later on back at the stand. So we just have a couple more quotes and a prayer at the end.
I was listening to a podcast the other week with Chris Hedges. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's a He was a journalist for the New York Times and got sacked because of his stance on Iraq. And he's a pastor. And his interview was with somebody called Omar El Akkad, who has written a book called One Day Everyone Will Have Always Been Against Us, Against This, which in retrospect, people always are against what's happened, but during it aren't doing anything. And he says, as dejected and cynical as the last year has made me, I'm watching daily incredible acts of solidarity. I'm watching people exercise great acts of love at great personal risk. I've watched people go into a killing field and practice surgery. There are immense acts of love happening right now. We are obligated to love one another, even in this incredibly cruel moment.
So for health and safety reasons, we didn't use candles. But actually, candles are a very important symbol. And I would just like you to just close your eyes. And if you feel like imagining that you're holding a candle at the moment in front of you, and taking that time to meditate for a second on what action you would like, what things have stuck out from you. There are plenty more actions again back at Sabeel, but what kinds of things do outrage you and make you pray for those people and pray for the courage to act? So in the midst of darkness, what gives you hope? What inspires you to light a candle? What is yours to do? How are you going to do hope? Now just think about what you can do to bring hope to the Palestinians, encourage them. We've heard about how the marches can really inspire Palestinians when they see the world is supporting them. And we're going to have a prayer with the words together. I'd just like everybody to say those words together, and then I'll finish the sentence. So together we can remove borders and cross all barriers. Together we can build bridges of trust and achieve justice. Together through our friends we can see the promising future, a future where all live in peace, security and dignity. Together, free of racism, where all have a right to a full and free life. Together. And just a last closing prayer. God of mercy and compassion, of grace and reconciliation, pour your power on all your children in the Middle East. Let hatred be turned into love, fear to trust, despair to hope, oppression to freedom, occupation to liberation, that violent encounters may be replaced by loving embraces, and peace and justice could be experienced by all. Amen. And that was the Reverend Saeed Alabuni who wrote that prayer.
So, does anyone want to say anything at all? We've only got 5 minutes, but go on, Alan.
Yes. For those who didn't hear that, during the period that David Lammy said he'd cancelled export licences, he actually authorised more different kinds. So they are doing a lot in that sense. Yes. Would you like to have the microphone in?
Sorry, for those of you not aware, there is a movement called Fast for Gaza. There was a call out for Fast for Gaza, which is supported by Embrace the Middle East. But it came from Richard Sewell, Dean of St. George's Cathedral. And there's a group of us who fast every Wednesday. There'll be lots of people who do. Fasting on Wednesday in whatever way you can. And Christians for Palestine then host a Compline for Gaza on a Wednesday evening. And at that Compline for Gaza online, to which you're all welcome, and I'll leave the details on the Sabeel
stall.
That's the word, thank you. Do join us. It's wonderful to come together in prayer, to break our fast together. And we use the Sabeel Kairos wave of prayers at that service. And we find that it's a place where we can say things that can be quite hard to keep saying in our own congregations. So it's a great act of solidarity. And the fasting is a tiny thing, but it is part of our habit as Christians to fast. And we share that with our Muslim siblings. If you're in London on Wednesday next week in Parliament Square, a group called All Faiths and All Ethnicities for Palestine will be breaking their fast together in Parliament Square, meeting between 6 and 8 and breaking fast together at 8 o'clock on Wednesday. Wednesday Fast for Gaza, Wednesday Compline for Gaza online at 8:30.
Thank you. And actually, that reminded me that Sabeel out of Jerusalem also run two Zoom events. So if you want to actually join Christians in Jerusalem on a Tuesday at 4 o'clock British time, there's an event called Kumi Now. And this is for activists. It's not necessarily spiritual. They have a different speaker from different walks of life, mostly in Palestine, who give you an update. It's very, very informative. That's at 4 o'clock on Tuesdays. Every Thursday at 4 o'clock, there is an ecumenical service led by Jerusalem, joined mostly by Americans and British Christians. It's very moving. And the same as was said before, at the end of that, people share actions. And for those who feel very lonely in their solidarity with Palestine, it's a very helpful and positive place to be. So keep an eye on those. Sabeel from Jerusalem, again, come to the stall and we can give you information on that.
One final thing, I think, from me. Can I just mention this tent's going to need to be vacated for the next thing at what time? Past one. Okay. So there will be an opportunity for people to still after this to come and look at the various things we've got here. Is that okay? Yeah. Yeah. Lovely. Okay. There will be tables to make them a bit more visible. But I think that's everything from.
Sorry, one final comment and question from me for you. Thank you for the session. The comment is just to mention again, Ian said at the beginning, the Iona community has produced 10 top tips. So if you, like me, are desperate for things that you can do that might make a difference, I find this very helpful. And it's over on the stall with Karen, who is in the pink dress and waving one around. And the question to the team, who know much more about the situation than I do, is I'm aware at the moment there is a global economic movement to try and reduce our being enmeshed in this system that we are of killing other people's children abroad, be it by supporting companies like Microsoft or McDonald's or whatever. And they have come up with the idea of reducing everything you can on a Thursday. I don't know if you're aware of this. So not using your phone, not using the bank, not shopping, etc. And it's to try and really cause a blip in that kind of economic system and make the people with power take notice. And I'm just wondering what you think about that. If that's something we should be doing.
I think it's a multi-pronged approach, and anything that we can do which makes people stop and think and takes control back to the consumer is really, really important. I think we need to have an open mind how these things connect, because for me, Palestine is a very, very crucial issue, but it's bigger than just Palestine. We're seeing all the international laws being trashed. The whole world, what happens next? We've heard other speakers say the same thing. This is not just about Palestine. I often do a talk that says, what's going on and why should I care? And this is a very important thing. So anything with financial, there's BDS talks around talking about how you can look at which companies not to support financially and think about where your money is and care about where your money is. And it's consumer power. It's been done before. You know, South Africa, the government supported South Africa. We had to fight for that apartheid to be broken. And that was done through BDS. So we need multi-prong approach. The marches are not enough. Writing to your MPs, not enough. You know, we need all these things, but it's only when people act together. I had one very strong peacekeeping Palestinian say to me, whose project was about non-violent action. And he said he was so genuinely depressed. And he said, I really care about non-violent action, but it's whether it works anymore unless the international community to support us. Because if we're just saying, oh, Palestinians, you be non-violent, all that's happening is they're getting killed. So it's up to us to support it. We are the voices. We are the actions for the Palestinians. And if we don't feel like getting out of our comfort zone, then, you know, God has a big question to ask us when we get to the pearly gates. So every possible thing, let's do it.
So just to say thank you very much indeed for coming. Please feel free to stay and have a look at some of the resources we've got here, or come and visit us at the Sabil Karos stand, which is in the takeaway. Please also do pray for the situation, as we've been praying today, as prayer is also important alongside the actions we can take. But thank you very much for your time. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.